ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are reading verse number 14 from chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. Kindly repeat after me. Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukha da आगमापायिनो नित्यास् तांसि तीक्ष्णस्व भारत मात्रा स्पर्शस्तु कौन्तेय शीतोष्ण सुख दुःखदा आगमापायिनो नित्या तांसि तीक्ष्णस्व भारत मात्रा स्पर्शस्तु कौन्तेय शीतोष्ण सुख दुःखदा आगमापायिनो नित्या तांसि तीक्ष्णस्व भारत। So we'll now read the word for word meaning. Matra, sensuous. Sparshaha, perception. Tu, only. Kaunteya, O son of Kunti. Shita, winter. Ushna, summer. Sukha, happiness. Dukkhadaha, giving pain. Agama, appearing. Apayinaha, disappearing. Anityaha, non-permanent. Tan, all of them. Titikshasva, just try to tolerate. Bharata, O descendant of the Bharata dynasty. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kindly repeat after me. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception. O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. I will now read the purport or the commentary by His Srila Prabhupada. In the proper discharge of duty, one has to learn to tolerate non-permanent appearances and disappearances of happiness and distress. According to Vedic injunction, one has to take his bath early in the morning, even during the month of Magh, that is January-February. It is very cold at that time, but in spite of that, a man who abides by the religious principles does not hesitate to take his bath. Similarly, a woman does not hesitate to cook in the kitchen in the months of May and June, the hottest part of the summer season. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. Similarly, to fight is the religious principle of the Kshatriyas, And although one has to fight with some friend or relative, one should not deviate from his prescribed duty. One has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge, because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of Maya, illusion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side, and to address him as Bharata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have a great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties. Therefore, he cannot avoid fighting. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesh Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So last Wednesday, we studied the 13th shloka of the second chapter, the shloka previous to this one. And we heard from Lord Krishna in that verse that the beginning of spiritual knowledge is that we are not this body and that we are the soul. We are actually part and parcel of Lord Krishna, Aham Brahmasmi, which means we are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Lord. So this is the primary understanding required in spiritual knowledge. But we also saw that somehow or the other, after coming into this material world, the spirit soul, he misidentifies himself with this material body. This is called abhinivesha, also called maya. Absorption in bodily consciousness, which is illusion. And therefore, the individual jivatma of the soul, he acquires for himself many false temporary designations, many labels. And he begins to identify with these labels as being himself. And in this way, his illusion multiplies. When he starts identifying himself with this material body, he also starts identifying himself with all the bodily pains and pleasures. He starts thinking that this pain and pleasure that is going on in this body is actually being experienced by me. Actually, I am undergoing pain, I am suffering, I am experiencing pleasure, and so on. But actually, this pain and pleasure is not the pain and pleasure of the soul. It is the pain and pleasure of the body. But somehow or the other, the soul misunderstands, misidentifies, and thinks that I am suffering, I am enjoying. And in this way, he is bound in the cycle of birth and death. However, when he somehow comes to the understanding that I am eternal servant of the Lord, then he begins to rectify his situation. Last time we also saw that the primary symptom of the soul being present in the body is consciousness, correct? So consciousness is the living symptom of the soul. Just like when a doctor is examining a patient, he looks for certain symptoms within the body, the heartbeat, the pulse, and so on. And when he understands that the symptoms of life are present, he understands that the person is alive. Similarly, when we see the symptom of life, that is consciousness present within the body, we understand the soul is present. And how do we understand that consciousness is present? That is described here. That you experience pain and pleasure. Because pain and pleasure is being experienced through the medium of the body. The body is being subjected to certain influences which the Atma infers as being pleasure and pain. But we must know that the body is actually dead and the soul is alive. So the most important question that comes up at this stage is, which is very often asked, who is actually suffering or enjoying? Can anyone answer this question? Is the body enjoying or suffering? Or is the soul enjoying or suffering? Yes? Soul is enjoying and suffering also? Yes. The soul is Sat Chit Ananda. Ananda means it is full of bliss. And this is the eternal position of the soul. It is not that the soul is Sat Chit Ananda for some time and then it is not Sat Chit Ananda. The soul, it is said, is eternally Sat Chit Ananda. So how can the soul suffer? So what could be the other answer? Body? But then mind is also part of the body. It's a subtle body. You see, this microphone or the stand, this is dead matter. If you strike a blow on this matter, does it experience pain or pleasure? No. Why not? Because it doesn't have life. Now this body, what is the body made up of? Flesh, blood, bones. Do the flesh, blood, bones have life? So that body, what is it? It is simply a lump of dead matter. It is simply dead matter. How can dead matter experience pain? How can it experience enjoyment? Can dead substance experience pain or pleasure? So, we are struck with a contradiction now, a paradox, dilemma, what to do? On one hand, the soul is Sat Chit Ananda. It is eternal, full of joy and full of bliss. So the soul can never enjoy, it can never suffer. It is always in bliss. And on the other hand, we see that the body is made of dead matter. It is always dead. It only appears to be alive because the soul is present. Therefore, where is the question of dead matter experiencing pleasure or pain? So what is the solution? Yes, but who is experiencing the pain or the pleasure? Yes? Yes, that is the answer. The answer is, actually it is neither the soul that is suffering or enjoying, because it is always ananda, neither the body that is enjoying or suffering because it is always dead, but the soul, when it comes into contact with this material energy, it, under influence of Maya, it identifies itself with this body and imagines that it is suffering or enjoying. So what is the answer? The answer is, actually the soul is not enjoying or suffering, but it is simply imagining that it is suffering or enjoying. Just like in a dream. You have a dream in the night. Sometimes it is a very nice dream. You are a king and you have a royal palace and you have many subjects, thousands of subjects who are glorifying you, serving you. You have a lot of money, all the facilities at your disposal. And you want to continue in the dream, but sooner or later you get up. And then you lament, oh, I'm back to my 9-to-5 job, I still have to go and earn my living. So it was a nice dream while it lasted. Then again, sometimes you may have a dream that you are being chased by a tiger. And you're running and running and running and the tiger is chasing and chasing. It is just about to pounce on you. And at that time you break out in a cold sweat. And then again you laugh it off by saying, oh, it was only a dream. So were you actually being chased by the tiger? Or were you actually the king? When you were experiencing it, it felt real. But actually it's a dream. Because you are imagining these things. Similarly, the soul is not actually suffering or enjoying. But the soul imagines that it is suffering or enjoying because it is overwhelmed by this bodily consciousness. Abhivineshaha. So this absorption is called bodily consciousness. In bodily consciousness, the soul undergoes all kinds of imaginary experiences. Oh, I like this, I do not like this, I'm happy, I'm suffering, I'm enjoying, I'm pained, it's very hot, it's very cold. And therefore, he undergoes all these dualities, dvandva, the opposites that exist in material nature. But factually, what is his situation? Factually, his situation is he's always transcendental. He's always spiritual, he's beyond this material nature. But somehow or the other, he begins to think that this is actually my suffering. It is my enjoyment. So bodily consciousness means to identify with the pleasure and pain of the body. But we should always know that the pleasures and pains of the body are different from the pleasure of the soul. The pleasure of the soul is called ananda. The bliss of the soul is called ananda. And the pleasure of the body and the pain of the body, they are distinct. So this understanding is the first understanding from this verse. So Lord Krishna explained, this is matra sparshas. Matra means matter or senses. Sparsha means in contact, touch. So matra sparsha means that sensation or that experience, whether positive or negative, pleasurable or unpleasurable, that arises out of contact with the senses, matra sparsha. So what is the pleasure and pain of this world? It is simply matra sparsha. Simply rubbing of the skin. That is all. It is described in the Bhagavatam also that this rubbing of the skin, this so-called pleasure of the body, is nothing but like an itching sensation. When you have an itch, you scratch and then it feels very nice. So you think, it's very pleasurable. Sometimes because your scratch has become a sore, so when you scratch it pains. So sometimes that itching sensation, it pains, sometimes it gives pleasure. Similarly, all the pleasure and pain of this world arises only because of contact. Contact of the sense objects with the senses. What are the senses? Anyone? Can you list out the senses? First of all, there are different kinds of senses. First of all, there are the knowledge acquiring senses called the Gyanendriyas. What are the Gyanendriyas? Yes? Eyes, tongue, speech, then two, yes, touch or skin, three, four, hearing, and five, the nose for smelling. So these are the five Gyanendriyas. And what are the five Karmendriyas? Karmendriyas means organs by which you work, the senses that are involved in work. Yes? No? Yes? Voice or tongue. Yes, voice. Number one. Two? Yes? Hands, correct. Very good. Third? Legs? Fourth? Genitals? Fifth? The anus. So five. So you have the five Karmendriyas. And then you have the five sense objects. What are the five sense objects? Yes? Sense of touch. Now identify each of the senses with its corresponding object. So for eyes, you have what? Sense of sight. For ears, you have? Sense of hearing. For nose, sense of smell. For tongue, sense of taste. And for skin, sense of touch. So the interaction of these 15 elements, actually there are 24 elements. This we will study in detail at a later time. But the interaction essentially of these 15 elements is this matra sparsha. When the senses interact with the sense objects, so there is, it gives rise to what? To pain and pleasure, desire and hatred, opposites. Either you like something or you dislike something. The mind is there to decide. Sankalpa vikalpa mano. The mind, its function is simply to accept and reject on the basis of what it considers to be nice and not nice, pleasant and not pleasant. So on the basis of the interactions of the senses with the sense objects, we have all these reactions coming up. All these imaginary situations are being created. So this is the analytical study called Sankhya philosophy, which Lord Krishna is outlining in various chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So we can understand in this way that this matra sparsha is just like an itching sensation, just like you have on the skin. So Lord Krishna, he's saying, Tam stitikshasva bharata. So my dear Arjuna, just learn to tolerate that itch. The more you tolerate that itch, the more you will suffer. So just simply tolerate. Because the nature of this world is that it is going to bring upon you influences that are always going to make you bounce about like a rubber ball between this end and that end. Sometimes happiness, sometimes distress, sometimes pain, sometimes pleasure. So you have to learn to tolerate Arjuna. This is what Lord Krishna tells him. And factually, he says here, it is like the coming and the going of the summer season and the winter season. Agama apayino anityaha. It's coming, it's going. Therefore, it is anityaha. It is temporary. So because it is temporary, it just comes and goes like winter and summer seasons. Therefore, don't pay much attention to it, Arjuna, Lord Krishna says. These things are all temporary. You are not temporary. Therefore, go out and carry on your prescribed duty of fighting. Why is Lord Krishna telling Arjuna this? Because Arjuna is hesitating to fight on the basis of matrasparsha. There it is subtle matrasparsha. It is a sentiment of my bodily kinsman. He is my father, my grandfather, my relatives, my cousins, my brothers. They are all arrayed on the opposite side of the battlefield. And now I have to kill them. The very thought is unbearable to me. So we have seen in first chapter of Bhagavad Gita when Lord Krishna, Arjuna says, "Oh Lord Krishna, now my hands are trembling. My hair is standing on end. My throat is parched and dry and tears are flowing from my eyes. And my Gandiva bow is slipping from my hand. I am overwhelmed with grief. I cannot do anything. I cannot fight this war. Oh Govinda, it is not for me." He lays down his bow and arrow and sits down with his hand in his head and says, "I cannot fight." Overwhelmed with lamentation and grief. So Lord Krishna is actually telling Arjuna that your lamentation and grief is nothing but matrasparsha. Why? Because it is based upon your bodily conception of life. You have to do your prescribed duty, although it may seem to be very painful. In the purport here, Srila Prabhupada describes that in the winter season, sometimes it is very cold, particularly not so much in Bombay, but in the northern states, in Himalayas, and it's very cold. But a person who wants to practice spiritual life and who wants to live according to religious principles must not hesitate to take cold water baths, even under the severest cold conditions, even though it is cold. He cannot say, "Now it's winter, so I will take bath once in 3 days." No, he has to take bath as regulated, early in the morning. In Kumbh Mela, when we had gone in 1988, we could see there were thousands and thousands of pilgrims who would come. Ordinary people, householders. Not that they were saffron clad or they were great tapasvis. Ordinary people, religious, devout people coming from all over India, coming by the thousands, flocking to Allahabad, Prayag, at the Triveni Sangam. And 3 o'clock in the morning, in January, it was so cold. In 1988, it was the severest cold wave that was experienced in North India for many decades. So it was very, very cold. And the Ganges water was like ice, literally ice. But in the thousands, these people were coming, sadhus, householders, everyone, unhesitatingly going inside and taking a dip and coming out. Similarly, we saw when we went to Badrikashram, Badrinath. And even in the severest cold, man, woman, child, everyone going into the Alakananda river and taking bath. Because when you go to a holy place, you should take bath in the holy rivers. So this is an injunction. It's a religious principle. So we cannot hesitate from doing it because it doesn't feel to be very pleasant. It's a duty as a religious person that I should do it, so we should do it. Similarly, sometimes in the summer months, particularly in the central parts of India or in the deserts, it is very hot. But it doesn't mean that all offices will close down, all business establishments will close down, that all work should stop. Work will go on. The housewife will have to cook in the kitchen. She will not say, "It's so hot now, and now for a few days we will fast." You have to cook, you have to eat. So in this way, whatever the external circumstances and situations, we must not hesitate in carrying out our prescribed duty. So Arjuna is a Kshatriya. So Lord Krishna is telling him that as a Kshatriya, it is your prescribed duty to fight. And even though you have to fight your near and dear ones, because you are fighting on the principles of dharma, this is a dharma yuddha. And this is dharma kshetra, the land of dharma. So therefore it is your duty as a kshatriya to fight. They are the party who is a dharma. And therefore they are cheating you, they are exploiting you of what is rightfully yours. And under my instruction, you have to fight. Therefore you should not hesitate as a kshatriya. In fact, if you do so, it will be worse than death for you, because for a kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. So therefore, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, tolerate this subtle matrasparsha. Tolerate it. It is painful, I know. But do it. Then you will become glorious. So many times, even in the course of our spiritual life, we have to do so many regulative principles. We have to follow so many do's and don'ts. For example, we have to chant every day a certain number of rounds. Initially, it may seem nice to chant a little amount, and then as we go on in spiritual life, it becomes like a burden to many people. And then it becomes, sometimes you're always tempted, is it all right if I just chant a little less today? Or if I do not complete my prescribed number of rounds today? So no. You have to tolerate the urges. The mind may say many things, but you have to do it. Because it is your duty, it is your prescribed duty as a devotee of the Lord. You have to carry out all these duties. Similarly, one of the...